second rules chair meeting of this year. The time is 4:05, and present for this meeting are Representatives Millet, Representative, what is your name?
Kurtulakertula.
Representative Heron, myself, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Heron, Representative Gardner, and Representative Newman. It's been a long day.
You got Heron twice.
Did I?
Olson.
That makes Olson. The full committee.
Well, my staff will tell you I've been doing this all day, so it's nothing personal. All righty. We have before us a CS, and I would entertain a motion to adopt the CS, and that's for House Bill number 334 for the purpose of discussion.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt committee substitute for House Bill 334 for the purpose of discussion, and that is 1310 /C.
Madam Chair. Right, we can get an explanation of the differences at all.
Yes, sir, we are. All right, with
I'll object then
for you'll object for discussion. All right, Representative Newman has objected for discussion. So I'd like to invite the representative from Representative Thomas's office to come forward and identify herself and her affiliation and position. And if you could please take us through the minor changes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Casey Schroeder Hotch, staff to Representative Thomas. There are several small technical changes that are made in the version C CS. The first one is on page 2, line 10. We delete the reference to an additional 10 days notice. Page 2, line 11, we change the word presumed to the word found, and this is stronger, clearer legal language. Page 2 and 3, lines 21 through 31, and lines 1 through 3 on page 3, we delete the reference to violent behavior and insert back the rebuttable presumption for domestic violence. Page 5, lines 22 through 27, is the indirect court rule amendment. We have two sections that refer to expedited hearings, and those change Rule 77. And then page 5 and 6, lines 28 through 31, and then lines 1 and 2 on page 6 are conditional effect provisions. If you change a court rule, you need two-thirds vote to get those passed. So, and that's it.
Okay. Are there any questions for members of the committee for Casey? Representative Kurtula.
Just one about the 10-day notice requirement. So the original bill would have required 10 days notice to the parent that's not overseas or not deployed. Is that what that was?
The Chair, Representative Kurtula, the intent was to get an expedited hearing so somebody could get take care of their stuff before they were deployed. And Rule 77, as is already pretty perfect in that way. And when we said the additional 10 days notice, that actually would slow things down. So that was against the intent of the bill.
Okay, thank you.
And on that note, I'll just mention that we did discuss that quite thoroughly in judiciary, and that was the intent of the committee when the bill left judiciary, although we just didn't get it taken care of properly. So we appreciate having this opportunity now. Are there any other questions for Casey? Representative Gardner?
Actually, not for Casey, but I guess for the chair.
All righty.
If we could have just a minute for an informal discussion.
Sure.
Because I'm really troubled by the element of delegation of visitation. You know, it's not understanding and agreeing absolutely that a child has a right to family on mm-hmm. both sides, particularly where the parents are separated and don't share their interests, that that's in the child's interest to know the grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins. But a child's not like an inheritance. If the first person in line is gone, everybody underneath gets it. The child, I think, has a right, first of all, to the parent. And if the parents share custody or have visitation between them and one parent's not available, it just seems to me that the parent who is available should be the one with whom the child remains. And I don't like the delegation portion. I mean, I would hope that parents who can't agree to be married and raise their kids together can understand that the other parent's family also belongs to the child and the child belongs with them. But still, the parental right trumps the right of an aunt or uncle or cousin to have the time with the child. And I just don't like the delegation of visitation.
Representative Gardner, I think I understand the intent of what you're saying, and I agree with your heartfelt intent, but we did have discussion in judiciary on other circumstances that could be surrounding, whether if there was different types of violence, or maybe why there was a divorce, or why there was a separation, or anything in the first place that caused that decision even to have to be made. Casey, could you elaborate a little bit on some of that discussion from judiciary?
Certainly, through the chair to Representative Gardner. Courts in the lower 48 have dealt with this pretty extensively, and they have treated this as basically as in the parent's stead. So if dad has custody every other weekend and he wants to go to the gym, I let my mother watch the child. That's how courts have been treating this, because this is a special circumstance when a parent is deployed, and this is a temporary circumstance. The deployment is not going to be forever. This is a temporary thing, and the courts have decided that the contact with the deployed parent's family is crucial, and so they have allowed this to happen. This is not grandparent visitation, grandparent custody. This is not. It's totally distinguishable, and that's how courts down south have treated that. Courts here have not had a chance yet to do that. They probably will after if this passes. And the other thing to keep in mind is the best interest of the child is the prevailing guideline here. If it is not in the best interest of the child to have a delegation of visitation, it's not going to happen. So that's the safeguard.
Follow-up?
Yeah, Madam Chair, and it's not really a question. I used to be a guardian ad litem, and I would advocate in the courts for a child's best interest, and I'm very familiar with, at least in child protection issues, what that context is. But I'm saying, even assuming that both parents and their entire extended family, and they all agree that they're all competent and loving and a good relationship for the child to have, and there's no problem about violence or any mistreatment of anybody, I still hold that if two parents have a child and one parent isn't available, the child should be with the other parent. And I would hope that if they're competent parents, they will understand and promote a relationship with the other parent's family as being in the child's best interest. But I want the parent who's available to the child to be first in line 100% if the other child's not available. I mean, the other parent's not available. I would just say that let the parent, the custodial parent, the one who's available to the child, make the decision, not the court, about the relationships with the rest of the family. I wouldn't want the court sending my child off to somebody else who's not the child's parent, even if they're family. And I'm a big believer in family and extended family. I'm just saying the parent should make that decision, not us and not the court.
The comments that I would follow up with from our judiciary discussion were that in an ideal world, that's exactly what would happen. But because those situations have not always happened that way, and families have been dragged into court because one or both of the parents couldn't agree, and then their deployment is still taking place, that's why we're addressing the issue.
Believe me, Madam Chair, I understand that. I've done child custody stuff, and it's ugly and can be really hard and hateful. But nevertheless, where there's conflict between the parents, they have attorneys, they have child custody investigators who presumably would be involved in this. The court would say, I want a guardian ad litem appointed to represent the child's best interest. My staff went through the bill and wrote a note, the delegation's in the child's best interest. How do they determine that? Well, I know how they determine that. They appoint somebody to make that decision and make a recommendation, and then the judge makes the decision. I'm just saying, I think a parent who is available should make that decision. And if another parent is deployed, I would say for my kids, absolutely, I want them to know their cousins, and I would send my kids off to know their grandparents, even if the father's not available or whatever. I don't want the court or this legislature or an appointed guardian ad litem to decide what's best for my kid if the other parent's not available.
Okay, Representative Herron, and then Representative Newman.
Well,
In part, in joining in this conversation, but I'd like Casey to maybe, from the way she observed the judiciary meeting, is we had to keep going back and saying, wait a minute, it's not just the deployed parent, it's not just the one that's about to be deployed. We had to continually rethink about the differences between about to be deployed and deployed, and there really are two different sets of standards that we had to place in the bill, and I think that that's why it's a military parent piece of legislation. So I would ask Casey to try to explain how she saw that dialogue go in the committee, that we had to keep going back. No, it's not about the deployed parent, it was about the about to be deployed, and then in other circumstances of the bill, it was about the deployed parent, not about the one that was about to be deployed. There's two different differences here, and I believe there is.
Casey?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, the parent that's about to be deployed would want to expedite hearings and make sure that the child is going to have proper care while they're away. The parent that is deployed would be doing this from a distance, having that's the other one of the provisions of the bill, is that they could testify electronically, and also wanting their child to have contact with their side of the family. Maybe someone on the committee can elaborate more that was there, but that's the distinguishing thing, that the parent that's about to be deployed needs to have the hearing taken care of when they're here, and the parent that is deployed needs to have the opportunity to testify when they are away.
Representative Newman, is yours on this point?
Yes.
Okay. You and then Representative Melton.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Casey, and I come across this too, Madam Chair, just as District 15 has a tremendous amount of OCS casework, for whatever reason, and so I tend to get involved in that fairly often. But again, who decides the best interest of the child? And what is a child? What is, and we've talked about the kid, a child, is it every, I mean, I consider somebody who's 16, 17 years old as a young adult, not certainly a child or a kid. What is defined as a child? And then again, who decides the best interest of that person?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, in this case, a judge would be deciding what the best interest of the child is. And a child is pretty much anybody under 18 or somebody that's still a dependent. So if it's somebody who is incapable of making decisions for themselves or developmentally delayed, the 18 thing would be extended.
So. What if the child, the 17-year-old, didn't want to go to the other parent?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I believe the child is 12 or 13, their opinion, the judge will factor in their opinion.
A judge, Madam Chair?
Yes, follow up.
A judge would render the opinion for the child even if they didn't want to go to the other parent if they were 12 or 13 or younger?
Through the chair, that's correct, but they would also take in the child's opinion. So if he says, I don't want to go with dad or I don't want to visit so-and-so, the judge would definitely consider that when they were making the best interest finding. The best interest findings have a litany of factors that judges can consider, and when the child is preteen or tween, they get to testify and tell a judge exactly what they want. Not that that is going to be the determining factor, but a judge will definitely consider that.
And I guess, Madam Chair, I mean, where the concern comes in, where this becomes an expedited case. So we have a case that's expedited, or, you know, I guess what I consider expedited is it jumps to the front of the line and you get it done as soon as possible. And we have a judge making those determinations where you may have a child is still a 17-year-old young adult who's saying, I don't want to go to that other parent. But we have a case that's expedited in the courts saying, well, we've made this determination and that's where you're headed. And, you know, we have runaways, we've got, I mean, this can, I'm just trying to get my arms wrapped around if that's a good idea or not, and right now I don't think it is.
Are you saying whether it's a good idea to expedite?
Well,
is that your question? I wasn't sure.
We've heard about how, and it says several times throughout the bill, how these decisions are expedited, and that's the reason for the bill.
Correct.
But yet we've got a kid, and trying to define what is a kid or a child, where we have somebody who is under the age of 18, and we have somebody outside the family, a judge or Representative Gardner said a person appointed by the judge or a court makes the determination in an expedited fashion as to whether that child should go wherever they are going, whether it's to another, the other parent or a grandparent or an aunt or uncle. And sometimes I know that kids end up where they don't want to be. And even not so much kids, but, you know, young adults, and that can get to be quite a predicament. And so I'm just trying to get my arms around that, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And maybe Casey can help me out with that.
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, I think if a judge grants an expedited hearing in this case and then finds that it's too complicated, they don't have enough time, maybe Jean could back me up on this, but they would probably issue a temporary order and allow themselves time to make a final determination. But
is that in the bill?
That's not specifically in the bill, but it is how things work.
Representative Millett and Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Just if we're having a little committee discussion, while I respect Representative Gardner's decisions, I can tell you that I have seen in my family, which is both native and non-native, it becomes an issue when one parent is not reasonable and the parent that's deployed wants their child to have exposure to that culture. And I would imagine that it would go towards religious cultures. It would go towards family traditions and lifestyles. So while I understand having a parent be the second first right of refusal if that parent is deployed, I understand a person's wish in their absence to have continuity of how that parent would parent and what they would expose their children to. And if you have someone who mm-hmm. is the other parent of the child and is unreasonable or does not particularly care about those issues, whether they be cultural, traditional, or religious, I could see where having that parent make that decision would be detrimental to the child. So having a deployed person's wishes known, who their children spends time with in addition to that parent, I think is very important for someone's peace of mind. So in their absence, they'll continue to have that exposure that they would have if their parent, deployed parent, was in the same city and was exercising their custodial rights. So I understand the need for this bill, and I think those of us that have families that are different and maybe have a parent that's irrespective or not appreciative of those differences would be someone that could really put up a roadblock to having that continuity of tradition or whatever lifestyle the deployed parent has. So not all parents are reasonable, and a lot of divorces and a lot of child custody cases end in hurt feelings and the likelihood of being vindictive as a parent that's not deployed and having full control over that child I could see where it would come into play. So I think this is a safety net for those folks that are deployed to have a little bit of say in what their child gets, irregardless or irrespective of the custodial parents. And I don't think it's a lot to ask for when it comes to people that are out of country having those things in place for them.
All right, thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I hear those concerns. I mean, I really do understand them. So I guess my question that I'll get to for the sponsor is sort of the distinction between visitation rights and, say, a shared custody. I mean, suppose these parents who can't see eye to eye and have sort of warring camps that require a court's intervention have shared custody of a 2-year-old, and the mom is fine with sending the 2-year-old to the dad for 6 months, the dad's fine with sending it to the mom. One of the parents is deployed. Does the other parent have to send the two-year-old off to another relative for 6 months? Would that, is that what this bill would do if they have a six-month on, six-month off?
The Chair, Representative Gardner, if the judge issued it that way, yes, but there's another provision in the bill that provides for temporary orders. While the parent that has custody is away, a temporary order can be issued and the other parent can have custody. So, and then that temporary order would expire once the person returns from deployment. And that would probably be the preferred method as long as the non-custodial parent is, you know, okay.
Madam Chair, I'm still sort of confused between the distinction between visitation and, say, shared custody. Is there any maximum time of visitation that a very young child might be sent to a non-parent?
Why don't we have Jean come up? Maybe while you're coming up, I'd say, you know, I think if we knew the answer to a definite time of, that someone might be deployed and when exactly they might return and everything, we probably could answer that too, but.
Well, we don't know how long they're deployed.
Right.
But still, if you have a six-month-old, one thing to send a six-month-old to dad for 3 months, it's another to send it to somebody else.
For the record, my name is Jean Michelle. I'm with the Legal Services Office, Legislative Affairs. And I think I understand Representative Gardner's question that there are at least three types of custody. There's legal and physical custody. There's joint. There's shared. And the visitation rights are really irrespective of custody rights. So a parent could have a visitation right without any form of custody. A parent could have visitation rights with custody. What the delegation does in this bill is allow a parent who's deployed to delegate only the visitation rights, not the custodial interests that they may retain over the child, so that the visitation wouldn't involve decision making parental role of any sort. There would be no educational, religious, or other rights that family member who's being delegated the visitation rights would have with the parent. The parent would first have an order that would provide visitation rights to that parent before they may delegate the right. So this isn't a matter of a court deciding, oh, should we give the child to Aunt Susie and instead of allowing the child to stay with mom for any period of time. It's a parent who already has a visitation order with or without custody that says, I'll be gone for a certain period of time. I'd like the time that I'm granted visitation with my child to be given to this family member who has already a close relationship. And the court would then come, and assuming that the other parent opposed that, the court would have to weigh the two parents' interests in maintaining access to and enjoyment of the child. And that's, and the court would look at what's in the best interest of the child and weigh both parents' rights. It's not the same, and the courts have told us in the lower 48 cases that have looked at deployed parent delegations. It's not the same as a third party petitioning a court to take that child away from the parent who is available. It's assumes that there's already access to that family member. There's already a visitation order to the deployed parent, and there's a reason that that deployed parent wants that child to have continuing contact with the family member. So it's not
And it's, in the courts have looked at it, they've looked at the other parent, the custodial, the parent who retains physical custody of the child during the deployment period, and have articulated that the non-deployed parent has similar rights. They, no one is able to tell a non-deployed parent with physical custody of a child not to leave their child with a person who is, doesn't otherwise harm the child. Parents have inherent rights in raising their child, and the intention of this provision and the reason it's been upheld so far when it's been challenged is to equalize the two parents' interests. And it's certainly a policy call on the part of the legislature. It's but both parents have constitutional interests in directing the care and custody of their own child. So there are mutual interests at stake here.
Thank you, Jean. Questions? Representative Gardner?
That's what gets to the heart of the problem for me. And I know it has language about being in the child's best interest, but what it's really about is the parent's interest. And I'm, you know, just fully committed to the child's interests. And that makes this just really difficult for me.
You know, I sympathize with you a little bit in the sense that if we were just looking at the rights of the child, it would be a perfect world, and we wouldn't even be having to deal with any of this legislation. And there wouldn't be separation and divorce, and even though there'd be deployment and things, we wouldn't have to worry about those kind of things. But
can I ask a question to maybe frames it a little better?
Sure.
Okay, so suppose you have two parents who have shared legal custody, but one child's in school and one child's too little for school. So they've agreed that the parent who doesn't have the kids during the school year has them all summer. That parent is deployed. So the other parent and could potentially delegate the summer for all the kids school age and not school age to another relative. So what it really hangs on is, can they find a custody investigator, a guardian ad litem, or a judge who will say, yes, it's in the best interest of this 2-year-old to be with the 7-year-old and the 9-year-old with some other relatives all summer. And the mother or the parent who would have them during the school year doesn't get to make that decision, the other parent. Okay. So under this bill, that could happen.
Okay, Representative Newman, and then Casey, if after Representative Newman's question, could you tell us where in the bill the rights of the child are addressed?
That was my question.
Oh.
This is where,
okay.
Casey, where in this bill do the rights of the child, where are they stated? Is there just somewhere in law that says here's the specific rights to a child, or, you know, again, I think a 17-year-old and some of these childs are, where do their rights come in on this bill?
Are you talking about the best interest finding? Best interest of the child finding?
Well, where do the rights of a child, or, you know, I mean, because a child is anybody under 18, where do their rights come in, start and stop in this bill? Where, is there a place to describe that or a way to describe that?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Newman, that the statutes currently don't specifically articulate other than a court shall consider a child's preference after the age of 14, and where you're specifically referring to in a custody dispute, the child's rights, is it?
Well, now I just got even a little more. Where you said at age 14, I guess, is a cutoff. So 14 and under, the child, young adult, doesn't have a say in it at all, I think is what you just said. But then, where is there in here where the rights of the child are described, or they just don't have rights except by what a judge says?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, courts have determined that children do have constitutional rights in many contexts. But that doesn't appear in this bill specifically. It's certainly implied that this bill does not invalidate any constitutional rights that children share with adults as just citizens of the United States. So in addition to their constitutional rights to privacy and some other considerations, and in some instances, the child's constitutional rights are of a lesser extent than an adult's constitutional rights. But the courts in custody disputes, other than the stated preference of a 14 or older child, are required to look at the physical, emotional, mental, religious, and social needs of the child. And that's through the evidence that's brought to the court, testimony of both parents, anybody else with relevant evidence. The love and affection existing between the child and each parent. So a right is an extremely general term, but yes, children do have constitutional rights in this country and in this state, but courts are restricted in how much they can defer to a child's own wishes when there's a best interest finding to the contrary based on the evidence as presented. So children, as we all know, they're not always able to articulate their own needs, and the courts have had to step in to family disputes and make that determination.
Follow up, and then Representative Heron and Millett on that point.
Casey, when you were looking at this and going through that, did you come across that issue and stuff? And I come across this because my wife was separated, you know, from her family and ended up with a parent that she didn't want to be with, and finally ended up being with the parent that she did want to be with, but it was not a very nice situation for her to have to go through. And it's hard to say for a 13-year-old child at that point. You know, their life, that's a point in life where it gets kind of difficult at times. But is there a way to try and look at this or to look at the rights or that? Or I know when you were working on this bill, you're pretty, you know, aware of what's going around you, and you talk to folks on this, and you're pretty intelligent on these issues. Did you discuss that issue, or did it come up at all?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, actually that issue did not come up, but I do know in lots of custody hearings that is an issue where you're trying to put a child in a home that they may not want to go to. That's always something to consider, but that's a larger custody issue that is beyond the parameters of this bill.
Okay, so it's Representative Heron.
Madam Chair, I guess I'll ask Casey this, but it's around Representative Newman's question is, of course, on line 1, page 2, is the rights of this child are consistent with the protections afforded under the federal law. And I know the feds want each individual state to accommodate military parents and their dependents so that each state in its statutes has these protections afforded to both the military and to specifically to the military dependent. So to the question to Casey is, those rights are articulated in the in that particular act, right? For military dependents. I mean, we're talking about a specific bill to accommodate these children.
Through the chair, Representative Heron, the Service Members Relief Act generally has to do with delaying certain actions while somebody is deployed. They can't foreclose on their home, can't repossess their car, can't sue for child custody. And the service member then has the right to ask the court for a delayed hearing until they return. The difference in this bill is that we also provide for an expedited hearing. So that's basically what the Service Members Relief Act does.
But there is provision, Madam Chair, there is is there provisions in that act that dictate Representative Newman's question? What are the protection, what are the rights of the military dependent?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, the Service Members Relief Act is specifically for the benefit of the service member, and it's not a whole lot of it even deals with custody and care over the service member's child. It's an attempt to maintain the status quo in all aspects of the service member's life. So I don't believe there is provision specifically for child's rights.
And Representative Thomas did bring that up, and he presented the bill to us in judiciary that was the reason he felt this was necessary, because it wasn't addressed in there. Representative Millett?
Thanks. I just have a question for the attorney. Sometimes what a children wants and what's in their best interests are completely different, and sometimes what they want they know is not in their best interest, and that's why they push for it in court. Is that something that you've seen in cases? And while the court tries to weigh that against their best interest, I've seen a lot of children, especially the 14 and above, that have gone in and testified one way or the other because of the ease of living with one parent or the lack of parenting from one parent versus the other.
Through the chair, Representative Millett, that is the reason there's judicial review and relief in these cases. In addition, children are also uniquely vulnerable to coercion by one parent or another adult.
All right. My intent and desire is to move this piece of legislation from the committee, but we still have a CS before us that's been opposed for discussion. Representative Newman, do you wish to maintain your...
No, I withdraw my...
You withdraw that? All right.
An objection, Madam Chair?
Did you say you object?
Oh, not to the CS.
Oh, a question? Okay.
Yes, I have another question.
Okay, Representative Gardner, that's all right.
I care intensely about this. I'm trying to...
And
this is, I guess, a legal question. On page 5, is starting on line 2, it says, a court may not consider a parent's activation to military service and deployment in determining the best interests of the child under C of this section. And following to, I don't know where C of this section is, okay. I'm just trying to understand, what is it that can't be, the child's best interest can't be considered? What exactly does that mean?
Oh, through the chair. I'm sorry, looking at my older version. This is Jean Michelle again. Representative Gardner, Section 3 does is it amends the existing statute 2524150, and 2524150C is current law, and it describes, I'd be happy to get a copy of that to you, describes what the court shall determine in making a best interest finding, and there's a list of 8 factors and then a catch-all at the end, other relevant factors that a court shall consider. And what Section C does is limit the consideration for either modification or awarding a petition of custody to the factors that are already articulated, and not allow a court to use deployment as one of the relevant factors.
Thank you.
All right. With that, are there any other questions pertaining to this? I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move CS for House Bill 334 rules out of committee with individual recommendations and any attached fiscal notes.
All right. Any objections? All right, seeing none, this bill is moved with individual recommendations. The time is 4:45, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.